I want to talk about being strong. Now I know that we are not the exceptional physical specimens that some people are. We don't have bulging muscles. None of us here are going to win any muscle man or muscle woman contest. But despite our physical lack of extraordinary strength, we can have a spiritual strength. We want to make some comparisons a little bit between some physical strength and spiritual strength. And that's what Paul does in 2 Timothy chapter 2. If you want to turn to 2 Timothy chapter 2, we're going to be spending our time there almost entirely today. So we think about being strong. We think about the Olympics. They have the Olympics every 4 years, the Summer Olympics every 2 years. They have the Winter Olympics. And you see some Olympic athletes that are extraordinary. The amount of stamina and the strength that they have and the courage that they have to do some of those things that they do. It's quite extraordinary and something to be admired in those individuals. They have the dedication. They worked for years to get there. And when we think about those types of things, we think about the kind of competition that those people are engaged in, and we think about the preparation that went into it and the practice and the strict regimen that they had to follow. And we think then about our lives as Christians. You know, it takes strength, not physical strength. We don't have to be strong with big muscles, but spiritually, emotionally, we have to have a strength. We have to have stamina. The Christian race is not a 100-yard dash. I guess they don't even have 100-yard dashes anymore. Everything's in meters, so it's a 100-meter now. But you know, when I was a kid, we had the 100-yard dash, and I was pretty good at it. I wasn't the fastest, but I was pretty good at that. But boy, when it came to running the mile, there was no way I was going to run that far. I just didn't have the stamina to go that far. I might could do the 440, which I guess is 400 meters now. I could have done that one. That was one time all the way around our track when I was in junior high. But then when it got to the two times around the track, well, I was really dragging. And you had to go four times around that track to make the whole mile. There was just no way. Well, sometimes that's the way we are as Christians, too. We have enough stamina to run a little ways real quick. And maybe we're really good at it for a short period of time. But you see, the Christian race is not a sprint. You take some of those sprinters, the fastest man in the world, he runs the 100-meter dash in less than 10 seconds. But put him in a marathon and see how he does. Now the fellow who can win the marathon may not come in the top 50 in the 100 meter, but he can win that marathon. It's a different kind of training. And we've got to remember that the Christian race is not a sprint. It is a marathon. It is lifelong. And so if we sprint and use up all our energy and then collapse and fall away, we haven't accomplished anything. We've got to have the stamina. But we've also got to have the courage. I remember them talking about, you know, when you were running a longer race, you had to pace yourself. But then toward the end of the race, you had to have the courage to run faster than you had been running the rest of the time. Can you imagine at the end of the race? Now at the end of the race is the time I'm going to slow down more. But no, at the end of the race was when you had to run faster. And oh, that took some guts. That took courage to force your body to go faster at a time when it was already tired. And you see that. You see that in those marathons. These folks who've just been jogging along for 25 and a half or 26 miles. Then that last little bit, boy, they kick it in and they're sprinting after they run all that way. As we get closer to that finish line, we need to have the courage to keep going and to push ourselves even further and even harder to make it across the finish line. It takes strength, stamina, and courage to live for Christ. I know that those who don't believe in Jesus talk about Christianity or religion being a crutch. They talk about it being for the weak. They don't understand how hard it is. They've never done it. They don't understand that the way they're living, that's the way for the weak. Living the Christian life is for the strong, for those who are courageous, and for those who have the stamina to make it. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 1 is already read to us. Thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. Now we want to talk today then about some things that are involved in being strong. What is true strength? Where does it come from? How do we have it? How do we keep it? How do we use it? All those kinds of things we want to think about. True strength includes, first of all, being a good soldier. You know, there's a lot of strength involved in being a soldier. That's not an easy life. 2 Timothy 2, verses 3 and 4, thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that wars entangles himself in the affairs of this life, that he may please him who has chosen him to be a soldier. So there in verse 3 says, endure hardness. There's a certain amount of self-discipline that we have to have in the Christian life, just like the soldier. The soldier doesn't have all of the wonderful amenities of life. You know, when we've got soldiers off fighting right now in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, they're not staying at the 5-star hotels over there. They're staying in tents and sleeping on uncomfortable beds, cots, and things like that. You know, it's not like a vacation. It's hard. They have to endure hardships. They have to wear a whole lot of gear and then go out in a hot desert and walk and run and march with very little water. See, that's hardship. That's enduring hardness. As Christians, we have to endure some hardness. And I'm afraid that so many times we are so spoiled in our culture that we don't understand what that means. We don't understand what it means to endure hardness as we must as Christians. We have to deny ourselves some things. And yet we live in a society that teaches us from the time we're very little that we ought to be able to get whatever we want. But Christ teaches us self-discipline, self-denial, self-sacrifice. Those are not common or popular in the world around us. We have to endure hardness. Also, in verse 4, he tells us we have to avoid entanglements. We've got to stay away from the things that are going to trap us and going to tie us down. Too many times we're all wrapped up in the things of this world. My wife was reading the diary of Anne Frank, a shortened version of it, a children's version of the diary of Anne Frank, in the car to the children yesterday. And as I listened to that, and I thought about her parents as they had to run from the Nazis because they were Jews and they were being hunted. The girls, and Anne at that time was just 5 or 6, and she was told to pick out her most treasured possessions that she couldn't leave behind. She only could take one little backpack, one little bag with her. She couldn't take big crates, couldn't take a big trunk. She could only take one little bag that she could carry, because if she was carrying a bunch of suitcases, it would look very conspicuous and they would have been caught. She had to put all of the clothes that she was taking with her, she had to wear. She didn't get to pack them in a suitcase. She had to put on several pairs of clothes, several sets of clothes to wear. Because if she was carrying bags, the German soldiers would have recognized that, hey, these people are running. So she had to take just the few treasured things that she wanted the most. So she had to learn to avoid the entanglements of this life when she was running away and hiding for her life. If you had to leave, you remember the Israelites leaving Egypt? God told them, eat the Passover, standing up, shoes on your feet, your belt, ready to go, because you've got to leave. What would you take? What would you leave behind? Would you be groaning and crying and grumbling and complaining about having to leave this and that and the other thing behind the whole way? You see, if we are that connected, that entangled with our worldly possessions, then what are we going to do when we have to leave it all behind? Because we are. We're not taking, not one of the things that you own is going with you to heaven. Not a one of them. How entangled are we in our possessions in this world? See, a good soldier doesn't have time to be entangled with the things of this world, because when they have to go, they have to go. They have to go quickly. And the things that they need to take with them are their weapons and their uniform. And those are the things they have to have. They can't be worried about packing a trunk full of games or taking their television set or they worry about those things, because those things aren't going to save their life out there on the battlefield. They take the things that are essential. They take the things that are important. They make sure they've got their MREs and they make sure they've got their bottles of water. Those are the things they're going to need out there. We're soldiers in the Lord's army. We've got to endure hardness and avoid entanglements. Well, I think that every time I said avoid entanglements. I don't know why I can't get those two words right. But then we see also that true strength includes striving lawfully. 2 Timothy 2:5, Paul says, and if a man also strive for mastery, see, that was the Olympics of their day. Really, they had sporting events. They had not the same as our version of the Olympics, but they had these competitions where they tested their strength and their speed and all of those kinds of things. If a man strive for mastery, yet is he not crowned except he strive lawfully. There are always rules. It doesn't matter what is going on in your life, there are rules. There were rules when you got in the car to drive here this morning. There are rules. There were rules when you were in school. There were rules when you were a little kid learning to play games. There are rules on any job that you have. There are always rules. Christ has rules as well. And no one is going to receive the crown unless they played according to the rules. That's why we shouldn't be so upset when we see someone who is a hypocrite and they're making a big pretense and they're making a big show. No, don't worry about that. If they're, you know what? They're not going to get a crown because they showed off. They're not going to get a crown because they fooled a bunch of people. Christ is only going to give a crown to those who play according to the rules. In the Olympics, there are always rules as well. You know, they always have the drug testing. And some people get kicked out because they and many have lost medals. They won a medal, and then it was taken away from them and given to someone else. because they broke the rules. Now, in the Olympics, sometimes somebody gets away with it. I know there was a lot of talk in this last Olympic, Olympics in China, that some of the people were saying, well, some of the Chinese girls that were competing in gymnastics weren't, there was something about their ages. I didn't follow all of it, but they were saying they were cheating, and they were winning because they were cheating in this way. Well, maybe they got away with it in the Olympics, because that's only run and judged by men. But God's not going to let anybody get away with it. He knows. And you can pull the wool over my eyes, and you can pull the wool over the whole world's eyes, but you can't pull the wool over God's eyes. He sees all and knows all. And you can't win by breaking the rules. And what's more, counting on a cheat makes someone lazy. You see, if we're counting on some fix that we've got in, then we're not going to play our hardest. We're not going to work our hardest. We're not going to do our best because we think that whenever this cheat comes along, that's going to push us over the top. So it makes us lazy. When somebody's not counting on being able to cheat and get away with it, when they know they've got to win, then they've got to work hard to make sure they're the best that they can be. We need to be sure that we're not counting on trying to cheat in some way, because we will be sorely disappointed. Then third, we see that true strength includes enduring suffering. Now, we talked about enduring hardness. There's a difference in enduring hardness and enduring suffering. Hardness may be unpleasant, and we may even suffer when we're enduring some hardness. There's some pain and some difficulty in training and exercises that we do to get ready for something. Yeah, there's some pain there, but that's not really suffering. I know it's not pleasant, but it's not suffering. 2 Timothy 2, 9 through 12, Paul says, "Wherein I suffer trouble as an evildoer, even unto bonds, but the word of God is not bound." Now when he says as an evildoer, he doesn't mean that he is an evildoer, but he's saying he's suffering the same trouble that an evildoer would suffer or should suffer, but even though he's not really guilty of it. But he says, "Therefore I endure all things for the elect's sake, that they may also obtain the salvation which is in Christ Jesus with eternal glory. It is a faithful saying, for if we be dead with him, we shall also live with him. If we suffer, we shall also reign with him. If we deny him, he also will deny us." Remember the old saying, no pain, no gain? Are you willing to suffer? What are you willing to go through in order to have the crown at the end of life? In order to reign with him, are you willing to suffer? 1 Peter 4:16, of course, Peter says, "If any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on this behalf." Our society is more and more moving toward a philosophy that is antagonistic toward Christianity. And for those of you here who are younger, and I won't define younger, I'll let you define that. But if you're younger, understand that if we look back at history, it doesn't take 100 years for a country to turn around. If you look back to Egypt, Joseph saved Egypt and saved most of the world by his plan that God explained to him to save the grain for the famine. He saved millions. After that Pharaoh died, a new Pharaoh rose up that did not know Joseph. Didn't remember what Joseph had done. See how quickly he... And he began then to enslave and punish the Israelite people. I want you to think about something else much more recent. I know most of you don't remember World War II. I don't either. I wasn't there. But I've read enough about it to know some things about it. The Jewish people in Germany were doing well. Many of them had good jobs. Many of them had money. But from 1928, we'll start there, as Hitler began his rise to power, until 1945, we'll go all the way to 1945, we'll go all the way to 1946, when he was overthrown and things were back on the road to recovery. How many years is that? That's less than 20 years. That's only 18 years. In that 18 years, the Jews went from being respected businessmen, friends with those in their neighborhood and at schools. They went from that circumstance to being put in concentration camps and killed in less than 20 years. So don't think that just because we're not being persecuted today, oh, it won't, it can never happen in my lifetime. It could happen within 20 years. It did in Germany. And when people began to become antagonistic toward a particular group, and when that particular group begins to be blamed for certain problems, oh, it doesn't take long for that group to become the scapegoat and for that group to begin suffering. So understand that it's a very real possibility that we may face suffering in the near future as our country continues to have these antagonistic views toward Christianity and toward the Bible. You know, there was a time when probably 95% of the people that lived in the United States believed in God. That was and when I say there was a time, I'm talking probably 50 years ago, okay? 95% of the people believed in God, considered themselves God-fearing, even though I know they may not have been overly religious or whatever, but they believed in God. It's steadily dropping. And you see around us churches dwindling all over the United States. Some say 5 or 10% loss in church attendance nationwide in the past 10 years. And see, that tells me that people are not thinking about God anymore. They may say, yeah, I believe in God. Hitler said he believed in God too. Okay? So we need to beware of the dangers that face us and be prepared for the possibility that we may have to endure suffering. We've never had to endure it. You know, it's one thing if you've grown up facing suffering your whole life. You know, you're just used to it. That's just the way it is. But when you've never had to endure it, then the first time is a shock. And it's difficult sometimes. True strength includes not striving about words. 2 Timothy 2:14. Study to show verse 15. Of these things put them in remembrance, charging them before the Lord that they strive not about words to no profit, but to the subverting of the hearers. Do you ever find yourself in a situation where you know you need to just bite your tongue and be quiet, but you say it anyway? It takes a lot of strength. Instead of saying it takes guts, it takes intestinal fortitude. It takes strength deep down inside to not say some of those things sometimes. That takes true strength. Now, sometimes we talk about it being, oh, wow, well, he just really told her how it was, or she just really told. And we go, wow, the courage they've got. It takes a lot more strength sometimes to be quiet than it does to mouth off. to speak the first thing that comes to your mind is not being strong and courageous. The old saying, it's better to be quiet and let everyone think you're a fool than to open your mouth and prove it. That doesn't mean that we never argue. I mean, it doesn't mean that we never have a debate with somebody, that we never disagree, or that we never speak up. There are times to speak up. But notice what he says. He talks about this arguing about words, striving about words to no profit. There are times when it is not profitable. And there are other times when it is profitable. You may find that as you're talking with someone about the Bible, studying the Bible with them, there are some times where it may be profitable to discuss something or even to argue about something with someone. But then there comes a point with someone where it's no longer profitable. It's useless. You're just banging your head against the wall. And you got to know when to just be quiet and move on and quit wasting your time and quit doing something that is to no profit. And in fact, sometimes you may be doing more damage than you are good because you're arguing with this person and other people are seeing you as an argumentative, hateful, mean-spirited person. And that does more to damage the cause of Christ than the fact that you couldn't convince this other person because they see this strife at work. It's not wise to argue about words when it's to no profit. But then true strength includes being diligent. We've got to 2 Timothy 2:15 tells us, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. And that word study there, you know, it's not just, you know, study the Bible. It's a word, it really means to be diligent, to really work at it. In other words, what he says here is that in order to show ourselves approved unto God, it's not going to happen by accident. We're not just going to wander along and then find ourselves approved of God. It's going to take a concerted effort on our part to get there. And yet so many of us are just aimlessly wandering, hoping that we'll happen to blunder along something that'll be pleasing to God. And it won't work that way. It never works that way. See, our goal is to be approved and not ashamed. See, our goal is that when somebody asks us about something about the Bible, that we know how to answer that. Not that we say, I'm going to have to call the preacher. But that we know, that we're ready. That we're prepared. And we won't be ashamed. And then the other part of the goal is then that we will be able to handle the Word properly. That we won't be misusing and abusing the Bible. That's a destructive thing, and many people do that very thing. But it takes a certain amount of diligence to avoid that. Then true strength also includes shunning certain things. 2 Timothy 2:16 through 18. Paul says, "But shun profane and vain babblings, for they will increase unto more ungodliness, and their word will eat away as doth a canker, of whom is Hymenaeus and Philetus, who concerning the truth have erred, saying the resurrection is past already, and overthrow the faith of some." So some things will cause ungodliness or cause more ungodliness in our lives. We need to stay away from those things. And some things may overthrow our faith or may overthrow the faith of someone else. And we certainly need to shun those things. We need to beware of not only the effect it has on us personally, but the effect it has on our influence on others as well. So there are some things that need to be shunned. And that takes strength. You see, that's where the world misunderstands. They talk about religion being for the weak. Now, following the Christian life takes strength and courage and the dedication to stay away from some things that other people freely engage in and think nothing of it. But we've got to say no to those things. And that takes strength. True strength includes standing on a sure foundation. 2 Timothy 2:19, "Nevertheless, the foundation of God stands sure, having this seal, the Lord knows them that are His, and let everyone that names the name of Christ depart from iniquity." Now, Christ is our foundation. He's the foundation of the church. And we can stand firm on that. You ever watch the sumo wrestlers? Or even in the Olympics, the Greco-Roman wrestling? And you watch them. Their footing is so important. They've got to be balanced. Because once they get off balance, once they've lost that foundation, they're going to fall. They're going to lose. We've got to be sure of our foundation. We've got to be sure that we're standing on solid ground. The song, "On Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand." But then true strength also includes being sanctified. 2 Timothy 2:20 and 21 says, "But in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and of silver, but also of wood and of earth, and some to honor and some to dishonor. If a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified and meet for the master's use, and prepared for every good work." Are you strong enough for God to use you? You ever think about that? You've got a lot of tools. You've got a lot of different things in your house and different vessels. He talks about vessels. You know, you get a lot of pots and pans and bowls and different things in the kitchen. Some of those things can go in the oven and some can't. Some can go on the stovetop and some can't. Some can go in the microwave and some can't. Some can go in the freezer, and some can't. Some can come straight out of the oven and go in the freezer, and others it'd bust them. Some of them, you can take them, they're hot, and you can stick them in the cold water. Others, you take them out when they're hot and put them in the cold water, and it'll destroy them. What are you set apart for in the work of the Lord? Are you doing work for the Lord? Are you letting Him use you in some way? Are you strong enough to let Him use you? Or are you going to break under the pressure? You know, I think about that with a lot of tools. I had a garden rake that I make the mistake a lot of times. I buy the cheap one. You've done that before, right? You buy the cheap one. You think, I'm going to save a few dollars. So I bought the cheap one, and I went up there, and I got big prongs, and I got up there, and I grabbed, and the first little root or piece of grass that it hit, it pulled the whole end of it off. Been there? You ever done that? It wasn't strong enough to do the job. It was supposed to be. And that was what it was supposed to do. It was a garden rake. But when I actually tried to use it as a garden rake, it broke. Well, we need to understand that we've got to be strong. But then we also have to understand what we're best suited to do. As we talk about those dishes, and some go in one place and some go in another, and some are good for one thing and another, we need to find out what we're good at, what work we can do, and do what we are best suited to do. And then, finally, true strength includes being a teacher. 2 Timothy 2:24 through 26, he says, "And the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, patient, in meekness, instructing those that oppose themselves, if God peradventure will give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth, and that they may recover themselves out of the snare of the devil, who are taken captive by him at his will." You see, sometimes we forget that teaching is not a big, lofty, lifted up position. Teaching is a position of service. Notice what he says, the servant of the Lord must be apt to teach, in meekness instructing those that oppose themselves. See, sometimes we think that the teacher is supposed to have the attitude of, I know it all and I'm going to tell you how it is. He says that the servant of the Lord who's teaching has to know, yes, we've got to have the knowledge, but we don't have to have the arrogant attitude. We've got to be meek in the instructing process. Teaching is a position of service. And as the servant of the Lord, one of the strongest things that we have to do, and one of the hardest things sometimes, is to be for those people who are not even on their own side. Be for those who are not even for themselves. You know, it's easy to help somebody who's trying to help themselves. They're doing the best they can and you just help them along. But what about the person who is, as Timothy says here, who opposes himself? What about that person? They oppose themselves. What about the fellow who's his own worst enemy? Are you on his side? Because he's not. He's not even on his own side in the battle. He's on the wrong side. But are you going to be on his side? Somebody needs to be on his side. Instruct those that oppose themselves. We need to think about that. Are you strong? Are you strong enough? You know, one thing about those weightlifters and muscle builders is they never think they're strong enough. Some of them are, they got so many muscles they can barely move. It's muscle bound. I don't understand that. But when it comes to the Christian life, we're never strong enough. We always need to keep exercising our godliness to become stronger than we are right now. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation, if you're not a Christian and you need to become one, you'll start out as a babe. You'll be weak, but you can grow in strength. If you're here and you are a Christian, but perhaps you haven't grown as strong as you should have by now, and perhaps you need to work more diligently to grow stronger. You need to exercise more. You need to train some more. Whatever your need may be, we ask that you respond as we stand and as we sing.